Leaning Toward Wisdom, the podcast, episode 5046. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio. You are listening to Leaning Toward Wisdom, a podcast. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. My name is Randy Cantrell. I'm your host. Today, old men are dangerous. George Bernard Shaw wrote, "Old men are dangerous. It doesn't matter to them what is going to happen to the world." True enough, but old men are dangerous for so much more. It's not that old men don't care. It's not necessarily that old men care. I think it's more that old men have learned what to care about most. Experience has taught old men what matters and what is irrelevant. And it's why you don't normally find old men who are dramatic. Old men are dangerous because they're able to teach younger men the things they most need to know. Nobody can teach younger men more. I don't think anybody can teach younger men better than old men. If only more younger men would just listen and learn. 2019 has been a year focused on the old men in my life. Back in the spring, I lost one. Others, they're growing weak and frail. Old men have always been very, very important to me, and I've lost a handful of them over the years. Old men who taught me a lot, but yeah, you know, somehow I'm just nagged by knowing there was just so much more that I could have and should have learned. Old men aren't likely so different from old women, not when it comes to the resource that they are, that they absolutely should be for those who are younger. And of course, younger and older both, it's relative. Earlier this year, as I said, I lost an old man in my life. He was 74. Okay, well, meanwhile, there's another old man in my life who is 96 and still going. He's my dad. That's a 22-year span between 96 and 74. I mean, right? I mean, it makes me wonder when a guy goes from being a young man to a man and then goes from being just a man to an old man. I mean, to a 10-year-old boy, a 25-year-old is likely an old man. And to the 25-year-old, a 50-year-old is for sure an old man. And to the 50-year-old, well, old just takes on a different connotation, I think, once you hit 50. Narrowing down the when, I'm sure it's important. I mean, after all, old men are dangerous, so we really need to figure out who the old men are, right? I mean, if they are the dangerous population, we need to know who these fellows are. I don't know. I'm going to leave. You can figure that on your own. I don't really have an answer here. I happen to think that old women are just as dangerous as old men, if not more so. So I don't discriminate. I can tell you that I am equally and have been equally fearful of old women as much as maybe even more so than old men. But being dangerous isn't restricted to being fearful. You know, they're dangerous in a good way. Kind of, it's sort of like that word bad, you know, and then there's dangerous in a terrible way, as in that concert was bad, which means the concert was awful, but it could also mean that it was good, as in, you know, that concert was bad. It means the concert was awesome. Dangerous is the same thing. You could say that an old man is dangerous, and it means you better be fearful. He's a bad, bad dude. He could also mean he's dangerous and that he's dangerously good. Yeah, let's start with fear. Why not? Right? Because that's when we're kids, that certainly is the easier topic. I grew up learning fear very quickly. Spanking was how all good kids were brought up. Not beatings, not abuse, spankings. I don't think it was a regional practice either. Rather, I think it was pretty universal, born from years of practice, sparked by the Old and the New Testament, teaching on discipline, spare the rod, spoil the child, and all that. It clearly was a defective form of discipline and training, because most of the kids that I knew, they addressed adults as sir and ma'am. Classrooms were mostly well-ordered, and teachers, policemen, and other authority figures were shown respect by all but the very worst kids. So spanking clearly was not the way to raise and train wise children. He says with sarcasm and snarkiness in his voice, I'm a fan. Yes, I am. And if you're not, well, that's too bad. It's just too bad for the kids in your life. I mean, it's barbaric, really, when you stop and think about it. I mean, it's better to have every child behaving like a spoiled hellion, smarting off to teachers and flipping off police officers and generally showing disdain for anybody who dare suggest that they not get their way, right? I mean, society is greatly improved by our intolerance for any kind of physical restraint or discipline to show kids that they are not in charge. Because, well, after all, the kids are in charge. We might as well treat them as they are in charge. And we do. Kind of like royalty. Royalty. The kids are, they are the royalty of all knowledge and all wisdom. And, well, it's the same way it was when I was a kid, right? Yeah, hardly. When I was a boy, old men were dangerous. Old women were more dangerous. And if you got out of line, and few things scared me more than an old man barking out, yeah, yeah. I mean, all I had to do was hear that. And that was a sound that every old man knew. I don't know where they learned it, except, well, you know, you pass it on, because now I catch myself, you know. And hearing that would just, it would stop me dead in my tracks. They didn't have to say anything. Just that sound. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I instantly knew, uh-oh, I better stop whatever I'm doing. Old women would get physical with you. I mean, they'd grab you by the back of your neck. They'd thump you on your head. They'd flick your ear. And that's if you were lucky. But old women would put up with more than old men. And, well, in private, not in public. I mean, after all, you were representing. And if you were not representing well, you know, you're not going to put the family to shame. And if you try, well, yeah, you're the one that's going to feel the shame, which means you better represent well. Being dangerous, you know, it can mean a variety of things, and many of them are good. I think the question may be good for whom. Here's a cut. You'll like this. You'll appreciate this. This isn't an old man, but this is a man who, at least on this particular occasion, got up feeling really dangerous.
No. Warm-up's not really, but when I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
Care to expand on that?
I just woke up feeling real dangerous. Yeah.
He is Cleveland Brown, OU Sooner, Baker Mayfield. It was a very entertaining press conference. You know, when I was 10, old men, they were either entertaining or dangerous. And I get, well, sometimes both. Mostly I steered clear of them, because I had already figured out that kids were the bane of most old men. Hey, let me take a detour here and pause for just a moment and ask a question. Is Project Craving Encouragement going to be canceled due to lack of interest? Do you think? It's sure looking like it. I mean, people are reluctant to share their stories. Well, no, that's an understatement. People are refusing to share their stories. I mean, that's more accurate. Even though 100% of the people I ever ask declare they fully understand the power of encouragement in their life, many readily admit that they can't really remember the last time they truly offered it to anybody else. Some can't remember the last time it was given to them. They have to go back to their childhood. I mean, is encouragement that rare? Apparently so. Are stories of times when we were encouraged equally rare? Well, evidently that's true too, which is why we crave it so. We all understand how valuable it is. Have I shamed you into sharing? Not likely. Well, I mean, not yet. I've been trying. It's okay. It's fine. It's okay. I'm not going to judge you. I'm disappointed. I'm horribly disappointed because so many of you contributed money to help me get the Rodecaster Pro here inside the Yellow Studio. And I really, 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 really wanted and still want to hear your stories. But I made up my mind as I hit the record button that I'm going to stop begging. I'm going to stop begging you to share the stories. I'm not a big fan. Well, I'm not a fan at all of coercion. If you change your mind and you decide that you're going to contribute, though, especially those of you who are on the email list and you made financial contributions and I've emailed you and heard crickets chirping, hey, if you change your mind, you know how to contact me. Otherwise, I'm going to tell you that Project Hashtag Craving Encouragement is going to be canceled due to lack of interest. It's sad. Yeah, but I'm an old man. Doesn't matter. I was dangerous as a young man. Here's the thing with me. I'm just getting more dangerous. There's the problem. That's not really a problem. It just is what it is. Dangerous can be good. Dangerous can be bad. Don Cherry was Hockey Knight in Canada. He's 85 years old. Even non-hockey folks know Don Cherry probably for his outlandish wardrobe. I've posted, there's four pictures of him. Just go to the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com, episode 5046. Don's dapper. That's what Don is. And he's always, I mean, always, 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 even as a young man, been very opinionated. And he's always dressed very loudly and sharply. Custom-made shirts with super, super high, tall collars kind of guy. Well, it's probably been 2 weeks ago now. He shot his mouth off on the air, something he's been paid handsomely to do for years and years and years, except this time it got him in trouble, got him fired. You can read about it. I'll put links in the show note. There's a number of articles, a number of opinion pieces, and I don't care however you feel about it. It was over the veterans in Canada, and you know, they sell poppy flowers and people wear them on the lapel, and they're in Toronto, a very diverse city. The thing that he apologized and wishes that he would have worded differently is he said, "you people." And the irony is Don's folks immigrated from Ireland. So it's not like he's completely anti-immigrant, but people read that it meant, well, all these immigrants who've come over and they're not contributing, they're not wearing poppies, they're not honoring the Canadian veterans as they should. And so, of course, social media and our tolerant, our let's tolerate and accept everybody world that we live in suddenly was intolerant. Have things been, well, I'm going to say it, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time with it. But we are preaching and advocating tolerance more than it has ever been preached and taught. And yet we are the most intolerant, I think, that we've, well, certainly in my lifetime. But hey, it is what it is. Old men are dangerous. Old men are dangerous in the sense that, like Don Cherry, they're liable to say anything at any time. I've got a theory on this. I think we're Don Cherry dangerous once we hit 80. I can't prove this, but there's plenty of anecdotal evidence in my experience. And I have talked with old men for at least the last 35 years about this specifically. And almost all of them have told me, people before they hit the age of 80 and people after they hit the age, that there is something that happens after a man hits 80. I've had countless old men tell me this. Now, I'm not saying that it, right on your 80th birthday, but something around that time frame where all these men older than me at the time, and every time I ask, they're always older men, who have observed the old men in their lives, and some who have reported it even in their own life, report noticing a difference. There's just a difference they've noticed a difference in their mentors, and some who hit 80 notice it even in their own lives. And it's not just a slowing down kind of a thing. It's just not able to really put your finger on it, but something happens. Probably easier to spot in others than it is in yourself, I would think. When I speak to old men in their 80s, I don't hear much other than I'm not as fast as I used to be. And they mean that in every way. They mean it physically. They mean it cognitively, right? The CPU, it's just slowed down. It's slowed way down. I need to do some homework to figure out what exactly happens, especially cognitively, around the age of 80, and particularly with men. I'm sure somebody somewhere on the planet is studying this thing. Some men tell me that they can't remember as well as they once did. Well, who can? And yet I can talk to other old men, and you've done this too. I've talked to old men, and man alive, mine like a steel trap. They can remember dates, and they can remember events on specific dates. And I'm like, I've never been able to do that. I couldn't do that when I was a teenager. I couldn't do that in my 20s and 30s. Some will tell me, well, they can't remember as well as they once did, and to which I'm always immediately thinking, well, who can? But they'll also confess that sometimes it's a struggle to find words to say what they're thinking, what they're feeling. I mean, it's kind of like they've got this hard drive of their memory. They know the words. They've known the words many, many years, most all of their lives, and their memory is still intact, but it's almost like that hard drive, they just can't access the information as quickly, especially when it comes to communication. And sometimes, I don't know, sometimes they can't access it at all. I was watching the other day, just this past Saturday, in fact, my habit is during football season, 8:00 Central Time, ESPN College Game Day. And it's just, I don't know, I love it. I love college football. Lee Corso is part of that panel. Lee Corso is 84. This is just my opinion. He should have joined Don Cherry in retirement. He should join him in retirement because it's just evident. It's been evident for a few years that he just can no longer keep up. And during the segment where the panelists, they'll pick who they think are going to win the matchups, right? Okay, so-and-so is playing against so-and-so, and they go down the panel and they pick the games. And during that segment where they pick these games, Lee sometimes, every week, he'll select a team who might not even be part of the matchup, or he'll make reference to a team that's not part of the makeup. For instance, he may say, well, you know, I think Texas Tech is going to beat Oklahoma State, OSU, and Tech won't be playing OSU. The opponent will be somebody else. And sitting right next to him is Kirk Herbstreit, a much younger guy. And Kirk Herbstreit is, in my book, a super guy, a super likable guy, knowledgeable guy, and he does a masterful job of covering for his friend and cohort sitting right next to him. And he does it in a way that really is helpful. You can, because I watch this closely. Because Herbstreit, he won't make it obvious. He won't make it embarrassing. Yeah, but Lee should retire. I mean, he really should retire before he becomes more dangerous. I'm sad for Don Cherry. Now, I'm a hockey guy. And I've always found Don Cherry highly entertaining, very likable, very opinionated. And it's sad. It's just sad to me. It's sad for Don's public life to end like this. I wish it weren't so. Decades of good, just kind of snuffed out for no good reason. All because a network, well, I think all because a network overstayed their welcome by giving him such a big public platform. And yet I was thinking about this. What do you do? Okay, the company that runs Hockey Night in Canada, and this segment of the show where Don shot his mouth off was called Coach's Corner. And, I mean, Don's been on their air for 35 years. What do you do if you're Sportsnet? If you're Don's employer, when he said what he did about Canadian veterans and the people that don't show them the proper respect, in his opinion, I mean, they should have opted him out some way, somehow, so that the man could have kind of eased out of public broadcasting limelight with some dignity intact. I know that that's easier said than done, especially with an old man, right? So it's a real quandary, because old men are stubborn, ridiculously so. And I would wager that Don Cherry has superhero levels of stubbornness. I mean, he just seems like the kind of guy who would. So maybe nothing could be done to protect him from himself. Our local Dallas Stars NHL hockey team, the color commentator is a guy named Daryl. His nickname is Razor, Daryl Razor Ray. And Razor said about him, you know, it was like that Don Cherry being on hockey, it was kind of like putting Archie Bunker on Hockey Night in Canada every week, which is admittedly true. And you would think, well, couldn't Sportsnet somehow kind of protect this guy a little bit and his legacy? And probably not. It was bound to go bad eventually. I don't think this was all that bad myself, but it is what it is. Give anybody enough mic time, even a podcaster like me, and we're going to make a mistake. The thing is, I can edit mine. I mean, if I say something that's too dangerous, well, if I know it, if I realize it, I can remove it. No, I don't do that. You know me, I don't edit. Spend time in front of a live mic, boy, and the odds of getting into some kind of trouble, it just seems to me that it's got to be crazy high. If it's an old man, well, if it's a young man too, it's got to be crazy high unless things are very scripted. And that's partly why I so respect those folks who do live broadcasting and guys who I think just take a colossal hit for no good reason at all. Guys like Joe Buck. Joe Buck is world class. I don't care who you are, and I don't care if you're a baseball fan who thinks, you know, you just got some axe to grind because of favoritism or whatnot. There's just no denying the guy's chops. He's got skills galore. Even Bob Costas took heat when he came out against the NFL for their idiocy with CTE and concussion protocols. And eventually, his longtime employer, NBC, they figured out a way to get him out. And by January of this year, Costas had quit NBC altogether. Now, who knows what the details really are, but I do know this much. Bob Costas is world class. He is world class in both talent and cognitive ability. And he wasn't an old man. Well, okay, except in broadcast terms. I mean, when all this went down, the guy was in his mid-60s. Right now, Bob Costas is 67. His replacement? Okay, he's not an old man. Well, not by Bob's standards. His replacement is Mike Tirico. Mike Tirico is 52. Enough said. That 15-year gap between Mike Tirico's age and Bob Costas's age, that's a considerable age gap. In the broadcasting world especially. And maybe the point is that verbal old men are super dangerous. And those in front of the camera or behind microphones, oh, especially so. I plan to go very dark, and I plan to be very quiet by the time I hit 80. Well, truth be told, I'm not planning to live that long, but if I do, yeah, I plan to go real dark and real quiet, which is why I'm doing so much talking right now, right? I mean, come on, I've got to squeeze all of this in while I have time. I got to get it all in. I got to get it all said before I hit 80, because after I hit 80, it's probably over. There was some breaking news that happened just a few days ago that Don Cherry is going to start podcasting at 85. Good for Don. I'm not sure I would do that, but hey, it doesn't matter. I don't have to because, well, I decided to podcast a few decades back. And so now I just have to watch myself so I don't get in trouble. But Don is absolutely going to do that. It came out, I saw it in a tweet. Ousted Hockey Night in Canada commentator Don Cherry is about to become a podcaster. This was a reporter of the Toronto Sun, said that Cherry is reviving his old radio show, Grapevine, in podcast form. Jordan Peterson is a 57-year-old clinical psychologist, speaking of Canadians, and professor of psychology at the University of Toronto. Back in 1999, there was a book that caught my attention. It was written by him. I had no idea who he was. The name of the book, Maps of Meaning. And it was really, it was rather highbrow, philosophical, and you could tell written by a real brain. 5 or 6 years ago, I really began to lean more into his work because, well, listening to him, once his voice and once some video emerged, he just grew to be infinitely more compelling to me than merely reading the words, the book. Now, it's not that that didn't sound right. He's brilliant. There's just little regard. He's brilliant. And Maps of Meaning was brilliant. And his other books are brilliant that I've read. It's not a knock on him. It is a knock on me. I just don't have the brain power to keep up with the guy. And watching him and listening to him, I find it infinitely intriguing and entertaining. He is a very dangerous old man, though. He's 57, so we're going to call him old. Thankfully, he is surrounded by some young men who also have hefty gray matter, who also happen to be dangerous. Guys like Ben Shapiro. Now, this isn't whether you agree with Peterson or not, and you may not have any idea who he is. You can go over to YouTube and Jordan Peterson. This isn't an argument about whether you agree with his message or not. There's just no doubt. There is no doubt of his danger. He is intelligent. He is articulate. He is logical. He's thoughtful. He is skilled at arguing his beliefs and his opinions. He is also willing to say what few others have been or are willing to say. He's brave. And even if he provokes enough anger for people to think and more deeply figure things out, which I think is largely what he does, he's not doing it just to be provocative, but in my book, that alone is worth the price of admission. And so I've watched him, and I've watched him, and I've watched his popularity soar. And as I've done that, I figured out that his age and his wisdom have helped him. This is not an angry young man, as many young men are prone to be. This is a seasoned, weathered, even in his indignation, this is a guy who sees some things that he finds atrocious, and he is driven, it seems to me, he is driven deeply by compassion. And compassion is, well, come on, compassion ain't necessarily a young man's game. I have learned, experience has taught me, life has taught me, that compassion is very much an old man's game. And I know that sounds odd, I mean, because we've got all these stereotypes, right? We've got the crusty curmudgeon. That's a trite figure. It's a trite figure, and it's one that, frankly, I don't find to be mostly true. Yes, they exist, but they exist from every demographic and every age. Young, bitter people grow old and become old, bitter people. You know, that whole get-off-my-lawn character that is seen mostly as an old man, that was a I'll kick your, you know what, as a young man. It's the same, it's the exact same thing. And you see way more young men, oh, I'll just kick your, you know what. Well, the young man that's got that attitude, he's going to be the old man that says, get off my lawn. I mean, they're just one and the same, except for their age. Old men are dangerous in part because they have courage. Jordan Peterson has got courage. Bob Costas has courage. And people suppose, well, they suppose that's because they don't have anything to lose, but that's just foolish. That's absolutely. Don Cherry lost a lot. Bob Costas lost a lot. Peterson, every day that he is on the road, every day that he's opening his mouth, which is every day, he is risking a lot. So I don't think the danger presented by old men is because they've got nothing to lose. And I don't think their courage, I don't think that's why they're bold. Rather, I think they better understand the stakes. Old men understand, well, or should understand, better the difference made in some things over other things. Old men, well, let's qualify this. Wise old men know what's important. Young men think they know. Some of them do, but not many of them. But old men do. Knowing what's important, knowing what's important, it seems to me that that drives courage. The tipping point of courage is when knowing what's important is coupled with strong beliefs about what is required. I think that's a really important point, especially when we're looking at old men, which is, I think, why Dr. Peterson, he speaks out with such boldness. I mean, why? Why would he, why is he doing this in, you know, here in his mid to late 50s? Well, because he has spent years thinking about these things. He has spent years observing these things. He has spent years researching these things deeply and with compassion, because he has deep beliefs in what is wrong and what could be done, what he believes should be done to fix it. So here you've got a man, an old man, he has knowledge coupled with beliefs, strong beliefs in what can be done to better the human condition. Old men are dangerous. Old men like that are dangerous. Old men are dangerous because they understand legacy. They understand their own legacy. And they're interested. I have not yet found an old man who is not interested in his legacy. Now, that sounds too self-centered and too self-serving, and most of the old men that I know and respect aren't self-centered. I've known plenty of old men and plenty of old women. The ones who were kind, they didn't start being kind just because they got old. They were always kind. The ones who were mean and hateful, you know what? They didn't just turn out to be mean and hateful because they got old. They were mean and hateful when they were young. They just happened to get old. And so it goes with self-centeredness. But there is something about an old man. There is something about an old man who, as a younger man, didn't give much thought to legacy. Now, the legacy that old men feel compelled to create isn't just for their ability to feel better about themselves. Now, I don't deny that that's part of it, and there's nothing wrong with that. But in my experience, it's largely influenced by wanting to pass it on, by desperately wanting to impact the next ones in line. Old men want to be remembered for something meaningful, and the wise ones know that that is best done to help the ones that are just behind them coming up. Let me give you a personal illustration. There's this little girl at church, And this little girl at church, she gets a Diet Dr. Pepper in a cup with a lid and a straw from me as often as I can make that happen every Sunday afternoon after our final worship service. And it all began when she approached me. She was provoked by somebody. And as I recall, her mom, I had this drink in my hand and she came up and approached me asking if she could have a swig of it. And of course, I obliged. And then I just gave her the whole thing. I just, here, take it. It's yours. And she just beamed. And from that moment forward, I now make it a point to take one to her, even if I don't get one wherever we dine out for lunch on Sunday. And I've remarked to my wife, in fact, I said it to my wife just this past Sunday. We were here at the house. We came back to the house and I'm scrounging through the cabinet and I'm looking for some kind of a cup, a kitty cup or something that we've got, which we always seem to have them. I'm looking for something. And as I'm doing it, I tell Rhonda, I said, yeah, I don't know what she's going to remember. I don't know what she's going to think, but I'm going to make sure that her memories of me are fond ones. Now, old men think like that. Young men don't think like that. I mean, that makes old men much, much more dangerous. Old men are dangerous because, well, our time with them is limited. They're only a renewable resource in the sense that there are always more old men coming down the pike. But they're non-renewable in the sense that when old men die, well, they're gone. And maybe that's why old men will say whatever's on their mind. Of course, the danger is often found in an untethered mind, resulting in an unfiltered tongue. You know, this is why I love, this came on the other afternoon. I hadn't seen this thing in forever. It's why I love watching and listening to the banter of really old movies. You may not have seen this movie, but you should watch it. The old man, not the old man, it's called The Man Who Came to Dinner. And the main character is played by Monty Woolley. And the role that he plays is an old man named Sheraton Whiteside. And Sheraton Whiteside is this kind of radio commentator. And I love the rapid banter of these really old movies. And I rather love the old character, this old Mr. Whiteside character. Here, listen to just this clip, and this will give you a flavor of it.
Oh, my, you mustn't eat candy, Mr. Whiteside. It's very bad for you.
My great-aunt Jennifer ate a whole box of candy every day of her life. She lived to be 102, and when she'd been dead 3 days, she looked better than you do now.
Oh, it's pretty terrific. You know, now you don't have all the stunts and the CGI stuff in the old movies, but you do have that, man. I mean, the banter was great. I was in high school when I really fell in love with Winston Churchill, and for the same reason. Here was this articulate, intelligent, witty old man, always posed to very quickly respond, and I greatly admired it. He produced the funniest insult in history with this famous retort. You've heard it. It was directed, folks say, either at a socialist member of parliament, Bessie Braddock, or conservative Lady Astor, who was the first female member of parliament. The story, depending on how you hear it, it could be one or the other. It was one of them. He was accused by one of them as being disgustingly drunk. And so here the conservative prime minister responded, "My dear, you are ugly. And what's more, you are disgustingly ugly. But tomorrow I shall be sober and you will still be disgustingly ugly." Even a drunk Winston Churchill had the wherewithal to do that. I was 15 years old and Deep Purple's Smoke on the Water. That was a big deal. Machine Head. That was the album. That's how I remember. The year was 1972. It was another great year for music. I know I'm digressing, but I am wont to do that, as you well know, when it comes to music. That was the year Steely Dan's Can't Buy a Thrill came out. Todd Rundgren's Hello, It's Me, that was in regular rotation on my turntable. You Wear It Well by Rod Stewart and Rocket Man by Elton John. Those absolutely dominated the radio in 1972. And me, well, I was 15 listening to all that music, and I was chuckling at this dead Prime Minister of England, noted for delivering great speeches. Barbs as well. I was infinitely more fond of the Barbs. I was very much interested in the Barbs at the time. I didn't much care about the speeches until I grew older. True confession. A younger version of me rather looked forward to the time when I could say what I wanted, like Churchill. Speaking of 1972 and old men, Mick Jagger, he was singing Tumbling Dice that year. That was a very unexpected hit, as I recall. It was a big hit, and it was a big hit by some old rock and roll guys. Well, we thought they were old. They were old men, man. They're dinosaurs now. It's relative. I mean, come on. In 1972, Mick was 29. He was almost 30. Over the hill. I was 15. Man, we were listening to Alice Cooper's School's Out in 1972. Ask any 15-year-old today, go back in 1972 and ask any of us at 15, if 29 was old, and yeah, see how they answer. I can tell you how we answered. Yes! Yes, they're old. Mick doesn't count. Yeah, I mean, he is Mick Jagger. Mick Jagger's been dangerous his whole life. Well, you see the rabbit hole? This is the rabbit hole that music creates for me. Okay, back to the regular programming. Old men are dangerous. Elders are highly regarded. They have been highly regarded. Well, they were highly regarded in ancient times. And in some cultures, I guess, it still matters. Not so much here in America. Old folks and the dangers they provide. That's right. I said provide. It's going away. It's going away. And it's not because old men are no longer dangerous, but it's because younger men don't care. Technology, that's had an impact. It has forced us to think that anybody who lived in an era prior to the internet, well, they can't possibly have wisdom. They can't possibly have any knowledge or insight that we could leverage. And so we assume that the world has changed so dramatically that whatever danger these guys may have provided at one time, well, that's long past. It's completely unrelatable to the present condition. I spent a lot of time and a lot of years fostering relationships with older men. I was constantly seeking out wisdom and insights from older men. I've done it my entire life since I was a teenager. Now, of course, I think what we fail to realize is that human beings haven't changed. We can look at technology and we can think, well, they got nothing to tell me. They got nothing to. But people are the same. People are the same today as they were at the beginning of time. Tech, it comes and goes. Right? I mean, I've seen the cell phone technology hit. Before that, faxes. Prior to all that, pagers. Well, the tech comes and goes. Those technologies are gone, and at one time they were bleeding edge. You can master today's most cutting edge tech, and within way less than 10 years, your knowledge is going to be obsolete. Frankly, your knowledge is probably going to be obsolete within less than 18 months. Master people, master knowing people, master understanding people, master communicating with people, 10 years from now, you're just going to know and understand more and better, which is why old men are dangerous, especially if they were dangerous young men. And then there's wisdom. Let's not forget about wisdom. I mean, come on, we can't forget the very punchline to this entire podcast. Wisdom, leaning toward wisdom. Wisdom is the quality of having experience, knowledge, and good judgment. And you can't get that. You just can't, well, you can't get that first one, experience. You can't get that without putting in time. And getting old is the trump card of putting in time. Getting old is the trump card of having experience. Smart, sober-minded young men grow older, and eventually they become smart, sober-minded old men filled with experience, knowledge, and good judgment, which all wrapped up into one is called wisdom. Well, does that sound like a resource? I mean, does that sound like a valuable resource? Yeah. Yeah, it does to me too. Which is why I have always leveraged old men. Not a lot of them, just a handful. I've lost three that I would say are very inner circle old men. I've lost three so far in my life. I've lost easily many more than that who were in kind of the next outer circle of influence. But I've lost three that were all dangerous in their time and in their own unique ways. Each one of them was very different. They were very different in their personalities, in their communication style, in their viewpoints, in their talent. But they were all very uniquely dangerous, which is why I leaned very heavily on them. I wanted their danger to one day rub off on me. Well, okay, truthfully, I wasn't waiting for it to rub off. I was going to do whatever I could to learn it. I was going to do whatever I could to absorb it. And none of these were imposing. In fact, no, they weren't imposing at all. I mean, none of them was so disposed to just take me under his wing. But if a fellow like me was determined to go under their wing, and I was, then they were very willing to let me. And I facilitated it. I fostered it. I drove the bus. I pushed. I nudged. I made it a point of my life to let them know, I want to know more. I want to learn from you, and I'm willing to put in the work. And that last one's really important, because if I've learned anything, I've learned that old men love a younger man who's willing to pay the price. And I've also learned that old men can be really judgmental about younger men, because they can pretty easily discern whether or not a young guy's willing to pay the price, willing to put in the work. It's one of the first lessons I learned about old men. Well, okay, once I got past being afraid of them. I saw the other day an online article. It was entitled, "Why Saying Okay Boomer at Work is Considered Age Discrimination, but Millennial Put-Downs Aren't." It appeared on some website called The Conversation. I'll put a link to it here in the show notes. You can read it. You can make up your own judgments. Me, I don't know. I think we are overrun with protections. We are overrun with folks who get their nose bent out of joint every time, you know, every time somebody says something that they want to take offense to. I mean, I think the alternative is, which is why I'm a fan of Peterson, Jordan Peterson, we simply could embrace a bit of kindness, compassion, and understanding. Yeah, but what do I know? I mean, I clearly do not yet know enough. Probably never will. The real takeaway is the disregard that I think all of us are capable of, no matter our age. All of us. In my youth, the phrase generation gap, that erupted onto the popular culture scene. And I wasn't much of a believer of it, even as a kid, because it appeared because of all this unrest in the 1960s. And I was just a kid. And even as a child, I could tell there was a difference in old folks and young folks. Because we kids, we were an entire category all to ourselves, which is why we ate at the card table, all the kids to ourselves. Old men allowed kids to be kids, so long as the kids would stay together. Whenever the kids entered the space of old men, the old men made the rules. It was a brilliant setup, actually. And the old men would run the kids out. And, you know, y'all go on. You know, it's like y'all got your own crew. Y'all go run with your herd. This is our herd. And it was a brilliant setup. In fact, it's a setup that I desperately miss. It wasn't old men disregarding children. Rather, it was an expectation old men had that kids would regard them with some fear, some respect, and some esteem. And guess what? We did. We did. We feared them, we respected them, and we esteemed them. And we listened and we obeyed them. Today, you know, I find myself often surrounded by nosy kids who refuse to take a back seat to any adult, ever. No, instead, the kids are always in the spotlight. It wasn't always that way, which makes me realize I have completely missed out on the limelight. Generationally, I completely missed out. When I was a kid, the elder folks ruled. You kids, y'all go off in there. Y'all can eat in that card table in the kitchen. And now that I'm an old man, well, the younger folks are all in charge. I mean, I never got my turn. I never got my turn. And now that I'm an old man, guess what that makes me? Yeah, even more dangerous. I don't know how dangerous I am. I'm like Baker. Yeah, some days I get up and I feel dangerous. I don't know that I got up today feeling dangerous. I feel more dangerous now than I did. So this works for me. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, before we're done, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I'm going to do it. Jim Collison, you need to check him out, especially if you're into high tech, if you're into gadgets and you're kind of geeky that way, you need to check out Jim's stuff. You can find him over at theaverageguy.tv. Jim Collison's not an old man. Lord willing, he will be one day, but he's not yet. He's working toward it, but he ain't there yet. Anyway, Jim was gracious enough to jump on a call with me sometime back, and we had a nice long conversation, and I'm going to play part of it. I may play another part of it at another time, but I'm going to give you at least his stories of encouragement here as the epilogue to this episode, so I'll insert that. I'll put links over in the show notes so you can check out Jim and his stuff. He's an interesting guy. He's a good guy. And I like him. And I was very fortunate to be able to meet him just not all that long ago. He flew in here to Dallas. He works for Gallup out of Omaha, Nebraska, and handles their webcasting and podcasting and other stuff like that. Other technical stuff. He's a technical guy, hence the website, theaverageguy.tv. where he does some tech shows. So he's a podcaster. So look for that here at the epilogue. I got nothing else. I'm sorry that it took me so long to get this episode done, but it happens. I'm without excuse. I got plenty of reasons, but you don't need to hear what they are. Hey, I'm an old man. I'm dangerous. So there's that. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com, Modern Tales of an Ancient Pursuit. Next week is Thanksgiving. I hope you and yours, if you're listening to this before or during Thanksgiving, have a safe one, have a happy one. Be well. My name is Randy Cantrell. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio.
Well, you know, Randy, I think the best, the sweetest, the nicest things happen always in the midst of adversity. Like, and I think sometimes when we run away from adversity, which I think a lot of folks do, like we're kind of taught now that adversity is bad. Avoid it. Don't get into it. Lead a perfect life. Try to get, you know, all your ducks in a row or whatever. I don't think, you know, just like there's no reward without great risk, I also think there's no great gratitude without adversity in it. Just, it means more. So, I don't know, 6 weeks ago, so I worked for Gallup, and 6 weeks ago we began a migration, a software platform migration of, you know, 22 million customers and probably 5 million current customers. And it was a pretty big deal, pretty big lift, lots of folks getting involved, lots of Gallup individuals involved in it. Maybe the biggest thing we've done in the 12 years I've been a Gallup. And with any kind of, you know, large software platform migration, there's always problems. Just always. You can't plan enough. You can't, you know, there's always in the look back of things, there's always like, well, what could we have done differently? Well, you didn't, because it's gone. You can't get those times back. And so we had some bumps in the road. I mean, we had some real, real bumps in the road. And part of my role at Gallup is to kind of be the forward-facing Facebook guy. That's just kind of what they, if there was a title for me, it would be Facebook guy. And I spend a lot of time, primarily because of my own podcast and understanding the kind of the power of social influence and the ability to be out there both at good times, which everybody wants to be out there when it's good. Like you know, to be an influencer, things are good. That's awesome. Like that's the best of the best. Selfies and shout outs and okay, that's great. But nobody wants to do it when things are bad and everybody flees, you know. And we had some really tough moments in this time in the last 6 weeks. I really thought it'd last two, and it lasted six. And so, just taking those complaints, and by the way, many of them valid. Many of them just telling the truth. Angry customers, maybe some unreasonably so, and some not, right? Some not unreasonably so, but. To kind of absorb that, I don't know, I tell people I kind of thrive in those environments. I kind of like them. I'm kind of built for that kind of firefighting craziness. If I hadn't gone into podcasting or into banking or now at Gallup, I probably should have been a firefighter. I really like the high energy pieces. So for the last 6 weeks, I wake up in the morning and the first thing I do is start work. I go to bed at night. The last thing I do is end work. And it has been many 18-hour days. Now, not consistent, not 100% of the time, but it's been a lot of work. And work I've taken on willingly. No one really actually ever asked me to do this job at Gallup. It just needed to be done. It was the right thing to do. You can't let your customers be out in public without some kind of representation from them. There has to be somebody watching the store. And I just took it on. So Thursday... we have a podcast at Gallup called Theme Thursday, and it's kind of focuses on one of our 34 individual themes in the Clifton StrengthsFinder assessment. And so I was doing my job. That's really kind of where all this started, is I just started podcasting for Gallup, and then people started finding this in public, and then they started asking me questions, right? And kind of one thing led to another. Again, that's been that experience with Theme Thursday. We're 7 years into this webcast. And the experience up until 6 weeks ago primarily has been pretty awesome. And then the bottom kind of fell out, right? And so for the last 6 weeks, I've been fielding these. On Thursday, while I was doing Theme Thursday, every month Gallup does an awards ceremony company-wide. And so I was selected for this Excellence Award, which is really about customer service, you know, providing that extraordinary customer service. Ironically, I was doing the thing that put me there, right? Which was actually really great for me. Immediately, I began to get texts and team messages and emails from my coworkers saying, like, where are you? You know, we're talking about you right now. And I had to tell them, like, sorry, like, I'm in the middle of a broadcast. Like, we schedule these, and so, you know, we've got people that come live, and I feel an obligation to kind of be there. I hate to reschedule those things because our customers have learned to depend on those days, those times to be there, right? Want to kind of be faithful to that. And so the award was great, but since that time, I have had dozens, you know, tens, fifties of employees come up to me individually and, you know, thank me for the role that I did and helping our customers. And Gallup's an employee-owned organization. So, and every customer matters for us. Not that for other companies they don't, but for us, every customer really, really matters. And so it was incredible gratitude to witness from not just the COO who gave out the award, not one of the directors who nominated me for the award, not one of my other directors who's been my partner in crime there, kind of doing this with me, who made sure it happened. All those things are great, right? And I truly appreciate and the gift of gratitude from the ones that I work with. But what was really impactful to me over the last 2 days, this happened Thursday at noon. So since, you know, we're talking 48 hours since it, like I said, I've had tens of people, and I would say 50 or 60, come up to me and just thank me for the work that I did. Congratulations. Thank you. We really, really appreciate it. And that changes the trajectory of your week. Like when you're having, you know, I'm getting blistered out there publicly. And
yeah, I've been watching that. I've been seeing the Facebook comments.
Yeah. Yeah. And not me, right? We have been getting blistered, but in my role, me as we, I'm a corporate guy. And
well, people who haven't endured a software update as major as what you guys did, they have no idea.
Yeah.
Nor could you expect them to.
And yet they shouldn't.
That's right.
And they don't have to. That's not their job.
Right.
We're eating our own dog food, so to speak, in doing some things, you know, behind the scenes. To our COO came on and apologized yesterday on the webcast, and which was, you know, you don't have to, but she did.
Yeah.
And some recognition for me in that as well. And so it's amazing to me, you know, I work in a place where gratitude is honored, and that doesn't happen a lot. Like I don't think most organizations are built that way, at least as you've had trouble getting people to, I think, come back to you to say this gratitude. I think that's indicative of the kind of the corporate cancer that we have around recognition and gratitude. And most companies just aren't good. I think most people aren't good at it. And it's hard. I don't know if I'm that great at it, to be honest. I work with some people who are, but it takes effort and it takes work. We have a book called How Full Is Your Bucket at Gallup, and it really is just a recognition book. It's just its whole purpose is to kind of outline of Don Clifton believed that every bit of recognition mattered, and you could not physically over-recognize someone. He's on record as saying you can't give someone too much recognition. It's not possible. Now, it needs to be honest and sincere, and it needs to be, you know, it needs to be for real things, not made up recognition. But I think, Randy, this is, and I've really appreciated what you're doing with this gratitude idea, because we need more of it. Like we need it on all levels. We need it in our families. We need it in our congregations. We need it in our friends. We need it at work. We need it as a nation. We need it as a globe, right? We need more recognition and more gratitude for the things we do. And I think that's why you find it hard. But it has been, for me, another great example. And this just isn't isolated for me. I have felt great gratitude from my coworkers, from my executive team, from those that I work with. I've always felt very, very, like they felt like I was doing a great job, and they let me know in that. And that's very unusual. I think a lot of people don't get that. I think most of them hate their jobs.
Yeah. And the timing of this for you certainly helped in the midst of all this technical chaos. And
yeah, well, you know, you get it, you run a little deficit, right? You get kind of beat up out there publicly. You spend a little time going through some difficult situations. Your heartbeat changes a little bit when you get that Facebook bell, because you're like, okay, this isn't someone sharing their pictures with me. This is someone sharing their anger with me. Right. And, you know, and so it kind of starts, those little things kind of take the edge off of a very difficult time.
I was looking around here. I keep my copy of Soar With Your Strengths by Donald O. Clifton. Mm-hmm. 1992, I think, is when it came out. And the minute it came out, and of course the title, I had no idea who he was. But yeah, I love the concept. And of course, this is, you're talking about a world-class organization that you work for, and no, not every organization is by a long shot. I think I've told you, and I've told the audience, the way that this started for me was sitting across from top leaders, business folks, and asking them about when was the last time, you know, somebody really encouraged you in a meaningful way, and had a hard time.
Yeah.
Everybody has a hard time of, they can go back to their childhood, most, a teacher, a parent, a grandparent. But yours, and we talked even before we started, we hit the record button, you know, this had just happened to you. And so, yeah, I'm glad that you shared it. Anything, you know, you had mentioned your father, something that was originally on your mind. Feel free to share that too, or if you don't want to, that's okay.
Well, I mean, no, I will. If you're game for it.
Sure.
My dad years ago, and it's been, I'm 50 now, so it's been 30 years. And I when I was in the military, I got the opportunity to go to their what's called PLDC, Primary Leadership Development Course. It's that course that takes you from being a enlisted private to a non-commissioned officer. It's really, it's a month long, live in training, you know, it's a kind of basic training all over again. And it's hard. And I was, you know, among 300, I was third in the class graduating. And my dad came up and he had fought in Korea in the 50s and gotten pretty beat up over there. A three-time Purple Heart award, if you can call it that. What's more of a consolation than it is an award, but three-time Purple Heart award winner. And really gave, in my opinion, gave he sacrificed his body for a war that was largely ignored. And today we still don't know a lot about it.
Except for MASH episodes.
Say that again.
Except for MASH TV episodes. Yeah,
no, right. Nobody on. And that even just takes the funny, you know, it's just kind of a funny approach to it. But third in the class, graduated. He came up. They didn't live very far away from, I was stationed at Fort Ord and they were down in San Jose. And so they came up. And he was locked up the whole time. Like when after the graduation, there's a bunch of officers and, you know, the whole division comes out, the whole leadership from the division comes out. So there's officers everywhere and lots of pride. And he is standing at attention like, and this was the 90s and he'd fought in the 50s. So it'd been 40 years since he'd been around. So he's locked tight. And he was not a man of a lot of words. And that's, I think, really common of that generation. Not a lot of words to me, maybe a lot of words in anger, and he struggled with alcoholism. So there were some struggles there. But in a moment of clairvoyance, he looked me in the eye, and he told me how proud he was of me. And for some people, that they hear that all the time. I had never heard that from him, ever. And I could have responded one of two ways. One is about time. Like that could have been like, geez, you know, how long? But I understood, you know, I had a great mom and she overcame
right
for him in a lot of ways and understood. This is just who he was and where he was at.
As a lot of moms do.
And had instilled in me this idea of, you know, it's just this, your dad has struggled.
Yeah.
And so it could have been, like I said, about time, but I really, that is still a day. I think if you ask me what's the number one day ever around gratitude for me ever, I would point to that day.
Sure.
And you know,
it was
an amazing moment and maybe changes the trajectory for me of my relationship with him. And, you know, we'd go on to, I moved out here to Nebraska and I used to fly back on Labor Day weekends and fix things at their house and work on stuff for them and maybe change the way I approached him and the way I interacted with him and was very, very grateful. He still was never very functional for the rest of his life, but that's okay. He was my dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, he told me he was proud of me and I didn't necessarily need him to do that all the time. In fact, once was enough.
Right.
And I just appreciated that. So if you were to send me back to that moment, that's the one I was kind of thinking of. But then in between this, so thinking about 30 years ago and then thinking about Thursday,
right?
There have been these great moments in between and I can't complain. I think, I think this too, though, and I've learned this at Gallup over the 12 years that I've been there, is you can't expect recognition and gratitude. unless you are doing it yourself, I think.
Yeah.
I think, Randy, we've got to be doing this. If you're lacking it, you can change the equation around you by starting it. And yeah, you can't control how people are going to respond. And that doesn't guarantee anything. That doesn't guarantee they're going to give it back. But I do think it improves the odds greatly.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And so I think if, you know, for people who are listening and they're like, yeah, no one's ever grateful around me. I think you kind of need to check yourself on that one and say, how grateful are you? And are you really grateful? And are you really expressing it? And maybe you are. And I don't want to play that down if you're in a really bad situation, right? But I think most of us could spend more time being grateful.